Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Joey Schultz and I'm joined, as always, by my fantastic co-hosts. Up first, he puts the eyes in harmonize. It's Matt Morgan.
So Joey, if in the new year you need someone to talk to, get some, you know, feelings worked out, I hear you should actually go to a music director because they always give very sound advice.
Excellent. You never fail to impress me with these dad jokes, dude. That one's rad.
What can I say? I take a lot of notes, so I'm always learning.
Oh, that's great. All right. Up next, he puts the harm in harmonize. It's Dana Roach.
What do you call an old snowman?
A puddle, probably.
Water would work as well. But yeah, Joel, you're getting too good at this.
Did I beat you to your own punchline?
You got me.
New year, new me. I'm learning. I feel so powerful right now. Matt, is this why you do the dad jokes? It makes me feel so powerful.
Ah. I'm just mad that you soiled his attempt to make a dad joke.
Excellent. That was excellent.
Because they melt into the ground. I'm explaining the joke, which always makes the jokes better.
Funnier this way, yes. All right. Anyway, this is the EDH Reccast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the Commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And here on the podcast, what we like to do is give all of that data just a little more context. Matt, do you mind telling us what it is that we're talking about in this week's episode?
Well, this week's episode, it's cold outside, so we want to warm it up with some hot takes about Commander. Really get things off on the right foot.
Yes, yeah, indeed. Commander hot takes. We'll see where this takes us. Gonna throw a couple of pieces of hopefully wisdom out there that we feel that we don't always necessarily say, and hopefully they land the way that we want them to. This should be a very interesting episode, but we've got some shout-outs to do before we get into that topic.
First, I want to thank Chase, also known as Manicurves, for their help editing the show. You can find them on Twitter at Manicurves.
We're ecstatic to tell you that EDH Rec has also partnered with Coalesce Apparel and Design. Coalesce has an amazing line of Magic-inspired apparel, and if you've ever wanted EDH Rec shirts or hoodies, you can now go browse the EDH Rec collection. Head to Coalesce and use code EDH Rec for 10% off your order. EDH Rec also streams on Whatnot. Join our content manager, Jason Alt, on whatnot.com/invite/EDH Rec. And if you sign up with that EDH Rec membership code, you get $15 of credit for free. So for Whatnot and for Coalesce, that's code EDH Rec.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by liking and subscribing on YouTube, subscribing on your local podcast app, just a great free way to support the show. Or you can go to patreon.com/EDH Reccast, where we have patron tiers of all sorts of levels. Whether you want to see everything a day early, we do release episodes a day early to a certain tier of patron, or you just want to join the Discord community that we have going on there. It's great to, over there, great conversations with our patrons. It's so much fun. So there's all of that and more over at patreon.com/EDH Reccast. And weekly shout out, as always. So Aaron Clem, I don't have anything to go off of Clem. Clementine.
Matt.
What's your favorite? Oranges. Vitamin C. There we go.
We don't need to make jokes about it. We just need to say thank you so much, Aaron, for supporting us.
I'm a man of the people, and therefore, I have certain expectations I have to meet. So, Aaron, I'm sorry if I let you down this week. But thank you anyways.
You have to give the people what they want, and what they want is dad jokes about everything all the time.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron. We really, really do appreciate it. When folks show their support through the Patreon and stuff, like, that really warms our heart. Like, it's really cool when people want to support us that way. It's absolutely rad. So thank you so much. And fellas, let's get into it now. We are going to try giving some Commander hot takes. I don't know. I am almost... I don't know how to word this. Dana, I almost want to, because here's the thing. My first hot take is that most hot takes are bad. So like, I don't know if that resonates with you, my guy, but I feel like a lot of the time people will say like a big sensational thing and they think that they're doing that thing where they say something so controversial yet so brave when really they're just saying something so controversial. And I don't want us to do that, you know? I don't want us to fall into that. So I'm a little worried. I don't know.
Magic is a pretty popular game and Commander is the most popular format of a relatively popular game. And the odds that you have stumbled across some keen insight that no one else has stumbled across, it's just going to change things forever, is pretty unlikely. So there are definitely insights and takes to be had, but the idea that it's revolutionary seems very unlikely.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot with the main topic
right,
here.
Right, like, I guess.
And admittedly, we certainly named this episode and had this idea because we know that there will probably be some eyes on it. Like, we've certainly seen time and time again that, like, the negative or the outrage merchant type of content will draw the most views. But, like, we don't want to, like, kowtow to that or cater too much to it. But we don't want to, like, say something sensationalizing just for the sake of saying it. Like, because you will totally find people online who are like, this card is so underplayed and it's fully, like, a Craterhoof Behemoth. And you're like, no, oh, though, you know? So, I don't know. I don't know if I'm making a good point here, but I'm hoping that we manage to dodge some of those potholes while we talk about some things that we feel deep within us. That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, and Joey, correct me if I'm wrong. What I think we mean to say when we're launching into this episode is, we're not trying to be bombastic. We're not trying to be incendiary with it. But recently, so we originally got started talking before the holidays about this topic because member of the Commander Advisory Group, Tim Willoughby, had a hot take thread. And I say hot take very finger air quotes because it was just a bunch of nuggets of wisdom that apparently are controversial. And so we wanted to kind of take the spirit of that. So yes, these might be hot takes, but they're really more things that people should be doing that just people kind of maybe look down on or not really look down on, but not enough people believe it as much as you think they would.
Yeah, that was a really, really good thread by Tim. There was like really just cool stuff talking about in that thread. And it was a much better energy than someone who's just like, I don't know, all mana rocks are a scam or summoning sickness was a mistake. And it's like, that's not a constructive way to begin a dialogue. Like, that's not great. So anyway, I've already waffled a whole lot before we even get into this. So Matt, maybe you should properly start us off with an actual hot take rather than my lukewarm takes. How about we just move on from me?
An actual hot take. So I guess this is a little bit of a hot take because people like playing powerful cards, but I'm going into 2023 with the opinion that format staples, and I'm using air quotes again for people who don't have video, but yeah, air quotes of format staples, they've never been less important than they are right now. And I mean that because the power gap between the top 1% of the cards in the format versus the other 99%, that seems to shrink every single set that comes out with just the rate of power creep. It is power creep, honestly, coming from Wizards of the Coast. The gap in power between the most powerful card and the next in line and the next in line, it's never been smaller. You don't need the Cyclonic Rifts anymore in order just to compete with, you know, Joe down the street. You can play with pretty much anything. So I don't think you have to have the staples, the best of the best, the D-Tutors, Cyclonic Rift, all of those. You don't really need those as much because the gap in power these days, it just gets smaller and smaller with every single set.
The syndrome line from Incredibles kinds of come to mind, the if everything's special, nothing is. If everything is a bomb, nothing is, right? To a degree.
Yeah,
like if every card is a staple, which at this point, there's a lot of super powerful cards in the Commander deck, more than you can probably run in your list, then that really eliminates kind of the whole notion of staples. That's not to say there aren't some cards. I mean, they're never going to print a better white removalist problem towards the Plowshares. It's never going to happen. So like, that's always going to be a staple that goes in that deck.
Right.
But you can probably run a replacement for Swords to Plowshares that's definitely not as good, but it's going to probably get the job done. Like we're at the point now where even if you don't run those few perfect cards, there's other cards that get you real close in a way that maybe didn't happen 5 years ago.
And that unlock more fun play patterns too.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about all the time on the show about how there's options that they're going to do the same thing, but they're going to be a little more on theme. Say you don't have Deadly Rollick, but you have Asterion's Thirst instead. So you're able to still kill a creature, but if you're playing a +1/+1 counters deck, you just get counters that just buy into your theme and you're still getting the removal effect. Mm-hmm. There's just so many different versions of that for whatever deck you're building.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I would say 98% of games, unless you're playing at the CEDH level and everything is absolutely optimized to a T, you don't really need all of these staple cards. You can get by with cards that are on theme that are just going to have a more fun play pattern, like you said, Joey.
Well, and I feel like the idea of the staple or the must play is itself the kind of thing that we ought to retire from our brains.
100%.
There are certainly cards that you're like, oh yeah, this would be so good in my deck. But like the number of times that we've seen people say, this is an auto include in Muldrotha. This is an auto include in Atraxa. This is an auto include, an auto include. And it's just like, all right, buddy, there are 200 auto includes that you've reported here from Muldrotha. I can't play them all in a Muldrotha deck, though. So, like, we do have to actually start to get choosing. And if they all feel like auto-includes, where's the moment where we get to put some creativity and some zest and our own personal flair into it? And that is a thing that, Matt, I know you're a huge champion of, and I feel like that's at the root of the thing that you're saying here. We're like, yeah, give more room to yourself and don't feel like any cards, like, you'd be a bad player for not playing any of those cards, because the idea of them being a must-play, like, no, assert your own agency in the game.
Yeah, like yes, you have to have flour in order to make pancakes, but if you only have flour, your pancakes aren't going to be very good. You have to have other things there. So am I a chef now? Did I do it?
You metaphored good.
I metaphored it. Okay, there we go. Perfect.
As someone who has fairly recently had almond pancakes, I can tell you for certain you're correct, Matt.
Okay.
Flour, a very important component
of pancakes. You need to put a little syrup on there. Maybe some chocolate chips if you're feeling spicy.
Syrup can't make up for pancakes made with acorn and almond flour.
Oh goodness.
I am already disinterested for you, Dave. So let's move on from this metaphor, because that sounds terrible.
Oh no. So the one I will start us off here with, 3-mana ramp is unplayable is a thing I have seen people written.
Yeah.
And said on more than one occasion recently. Mm-mm. And don't get me wrong, I have decks that vastly prefer 2-mana ramp. And there's probably enough 2-mana ramp these days that you don't have to run 3-mana ramp. But the statement that it's unplayable is ridiculous. And I understand, again, we're not talking CEDH here, and I understand the logic there where you need the perfect, most efficient mana base possible.
Sure.
But if you're not playing CEDH, you've already conceded that you're not playing a perfect mana base. So the fact that I don't want to play a perfect mana base, but simultaneously this one that's slightly less efficient but does offer additional upside isn't good enough for my deck is ridiculous. And I think you're just repeating something someone else told you. I don't think you actually have thought that through, because there's a lot of really effective 3-mana ramp spells that work in a whole lot of decks. And again, I'm not saying they work in every deck, but there's plenty of decks that have absolutely no problem running 3-mana ramp. If not, are better for running some of those Midnight Clock or Cursed Mirror kind of spells. And to just blanketly ignore that and say that not only doesn't make you sound clever, but makes you sound like you don't know what you're talking about.
But well, and that's such a thing too, because I know one of Joey's favorite cards from the past couple of years is Cursed Beer. Mm. And that's a 3-mana mana rock that has some sort of upside. And we've praised WotC for exploring this space. Gavin Verhey has said several times they like doing this. And so saying that either 3-mana is too slow, or it's just not good. Like I also struggle with that notion. Ideally, if you're playing a very low to the ground deck, then maybe you want to prioritize the 2-mana if possible, but it's not always possible depending on the color combination you're playing. So saying 3-mana isn't good enough anymore, I struggle with that notion as well.
Unplayable in my specific deck, in my specific meta, is a whole different thing than unplayable in a general sense.
And yes.
People want to throw that blanket statement out there, and I that's just seems beyond silly to me. And it's one of those things that is so silly that makes me have a tough time taking the person seriously when they say it.
It's one that we champion the 3-mana rocks a lot on this show. Like, I dare say it's maybe something we've talked about too much potentially. Like, if we keep talking sure. about it every week.
Yeah, sure. So we're talking about it now. So
And so we see a lot of people give us feedback directly where they're just like, no, it's actually unplayable. You guys are totally wrong about this. And it's just like, we don't agree, because we have a lot of fun when we play Heraldic Banner, and then all my 1/1s turn into 2/1s, and then I smash people in the face for 20 damage. Like, that feels pretty good, actually. That's really, really great. And yeah, so like just in the way that like staple is probably a thing that we ought to retire, the term unplayable is also a term that I don't like saying, because I don't believe that cards are good in a vacuum. I don't believe that cards are good like as an essence unto themselves. I think that cards are good within context. They are good within a certain type of deck, or they might be not as great in another type of deck. Like, that is the view that is more complex that we actually ought to sink our teeth into, rather than just making blanket statements without nuance.
Only Sith steal in absolutes, Joey.
Wow. Which is itself an absolute. Interesting, Dana. How interesting.
Yes, yeah. Well, actually.
What is going on anymore? Well, Joey, why don't you us with something of the controversial take then, since, again, we're finding ourselves just watered down with this.
I am a little bit worried. I hope that I manage to phrase this next one well. I don't know if I will, so I appreciate everyone's patience with me in advance. But this is one that I definitely feel down deep in my soul, is that it feels to me a lot of the time that there are a lot of people who watch Magic content, Commander content, gameplay, stuff like that, not for the purpose of enjoying the content, but for the purpose of trying to outsmart the content. Like, people commenting about the mistakes that you made in the game and stuff like that within the comments. And I don't believe that that is the type of thing that makes you a better Magic player or a better citizen of the internet. As a recent example, I was on a Shuffle Up and Play episode on Prof's channel, and that was really, really awesome. And in that video, he pulled a dastardly trick on us where we got handed decks we had literally never seen before. And this was like 8 months ago, like just decks that none of us knew how to play. And there were a lot of people in the comments who were like, oh, you're misplaying this. And it's just like, buddy, I've never seen these cards before. I don't know what to tell you. And so that's just like, yeah, it's not, I don't think that's a very productive energy. And I don't think it is a great way to engage with content. I think that you should engage with content on its terms rather than trying to outwit it, because I don't think that that makes you a better Magic player. And enjoying people having fun together is the point of Commander to me. So I hope I've phrased that well. And I don't know if any of that resonates with you guys, but I hope it does.
I think you phrased it well, and it definitely resonates. I would say outsmarting me isn't nearly the achievement one might want to think it is. I have a child who started outsmarting me at age 3. So just because you've figured out something I missed isn't nearly the achievement you might want it to be. I miss things all the time. It's a miracle I show up to record this podcast sometimes.
Well, and here's the thing where it gets a step deeper, is that a lot of the time, like, this will sometimes manifest as people like will go into comments of videos saying, oh, there was a misplay here. But the thing that they're trying to well actually about, they themselves are wrong about.
Right.
And I'm just like, see, that's what, like, the desire to try and be the smartest about how this game should have gone, or how you think the rules are, like, that desire will sometimes make you try to correct a thing when it was actually correct in the first place. And Matt, here's a big point that I definitely know that you and I have touched on a lot, is that we can't see what's in people's hands during stuff like a gameplay video.
Yes.
So you don't know what they're sitting on. You have no idea if they're planning something. All you can see is the actions that are just above board, but they might be hiding a secret from the other players and from the audience. And that's a much more important thing to keep in mind. I think that lesson does make you a better Magic player, because you don't know what could happen and you want to be prepared for anything. I think that is a good lesson to remember instead of trying to, well, actually, I guess.
Yeah. I unless you have perfect information about what's in the decks, what's in hands, all of that, I really struggle when people backseat play Commander, especially when it's on streams or anything like that. It's really, really hard. Like, you'll find pro players who go back and watch the replays and try to nitpick themselves and find what could have been a better line. And when people who have made a living playing and winning tournaments even look back and look for ways that they could have improved, I doubt that most of us in real time are going to know everything that could have been done better. Especially when you don't, like you said, Joey, you don't know people's hands, you don't know things. Maybe you forgot about a card they have in the graveyard that they're waiting to reanimate, or whatever else is going on. So yeah,
Sure.
There's a lot that goes into making decisions. And so I also struggle when people say, oh, this was actually the right call. Well, you don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of a thorny one. And granted, you know, again, this is a perspective that we might have a little bit, you know, because we are creating content. So we see the YouTube comments, which are like not the overwhelming majority of people. Like there are a lot of types of people who will watch a thing without commenting on it, watch a thing without, or even just listen to a thing without commenting or whatever. But there's a certain type of attitude that I see online that I don't think is always the type of attitude that actually makes us better. And I really hope that it doesn't translate into them correcting other people in real time. That's, I guess, my ultimate worry, is that
sure.
The attitude of backseating, even in a comment section, might translate into an attitude of backseating in real life games and telling other people what the threat is. Like, you should be doing this, or you ought to be taking care of their commander over there. And that's just, like you said, Matt, backseating is just so... no, that's such a pet peeve, and I really don't want that. So, kind of a big one there for me. But yeah, I hope that all of that worked out, translated to y'all. I'm gonna take a breath here for a moment.
The next one I have here, it piggybacks a little bit off my previous comment about three mana being unplayable. And it's that people can get a little bit too hung up, I think, on efficiency in Commander. You can make your deck too efficient, particularly when you're, you know, not playing at the CEDH level. Almost universally, when you pick a more efficient card, you're giving up some utility, right? So like the one that always comes up to me is Nature's Claim. For a single green mana, you destroy artifact or enchantment. You gave the person some life and that's it. But it's a hyper efficient removal spell versus one of my favorite cards, Deglamour, that has quite a bit more utility baked into it in that it can hit indestructible, or you can wreck atop a deck tutor, or it doesn't generate death triggers, whatever. But it costs an additional colorless mana. So like you are playing a less efficient spell to gain utility. I understand why CEDH players want to play Nature's Claim. Like the way that format works, you need to have optimal efficiency to be able to get things done that you need to get done. That isn't true necessarily outside of CEDH. Maybe in your particular meta it is, I guess. But what I'm saying is, understand the situation and understand what you're giving up to achieve that efficiency, because you can absolutely, for the sake of efficiency, sacrifice too much power and wind up with a deck that's more efficient, but not strong enough or unable to win games the way you want it to. That's just something I think people need to be cautious about, is not assume efficiency is the be-all and end-all of deck power. Your deck can be less efficient and be stronger than it would be if it was more efficient in such situations. So understand what you're giving up and whether or not that applies to where you're playing and the power level you're playing at.
So Dana, I love this point. Actually, I had a fairly similar point that I'm just going to piggyback off of yours, where not optimization doesn't only apply to power levels anymore. It used to be, oh, well, I optimized the deck, I made it as efficient as possible, but I think there's multiple ways, and I've struggled with this, trying to figure out a way to word this thought process. So I guess we'll do it here in real time. So you're welcome. but the ways to optimize a deck, there it can be, you can optimize it socially. So you're taking out, say, I know CAG member Rachel Weeks always talks about, well, board wipes, they just elongate the game, they make the game drag out forever. So maybe you're optimizing a game for social situations where you're taking out your third and fourth board wipe, because you don't want games to go on that long. So maybe you get one. If you don't, it whatever. It's a social experience. But also, Dana, you've joked about your Gliss of the Traitor deck, how you have to play early in the night, you're going to miss too many triggers, stuff like that. So maybe you optimize it for your own experience. So that way, maybe you're, yes, there's a card that might be absolutely fantastic, perfect for Glissa, but you don't play it because you just know you're going to miss too many triggers, or you're not going to be able to play it very well. So maybe you optimize it so that you're able to play it better. So there's optimization doesn't only apply to how efficient and powerful the deck is. You can optimize it on different axes, however you say that word. There's different ways you can optimize a deck, and it doesn't just apply to power level.
I love that. And you know what? Here's a thing. Like, I don't know, maybe I've been too online, but like when you were talking there, you mentioned CAG member Rachel Weeks saying, you know, sometimes board wipes can have the effect of drawing out the game and reducing enjoyment. But like Rachel Weeks is not anti-board wipe. Like, no. And that's yes. a level of nuance that the internet sometimes does not possess. And so I feel the need to like clarify real quick that Rachel Weeks also plays board wipes. We've seen her on Game Nights casting ruinous ultimatums and things like that, you know, like, but there's also just, you know, there's an extension to that, that like the primary thing that is at the forefront here, as you said, is the social experience. And yes, that is the thing that you can also optimize for. And that we have loved to do, like, we enjoy playing cards that our opponents like losing to is a common refrain that we constantly like to bring back up. And that's one more example of it.
Yeah, well, because I think we all in kind of experienced that, speaking of doing things in real time, Matt, when the pandemic hit and we all found ourselves only playing on Spelltable, we all had to tweak our decks in one way or another to optimize that experience, whether it was remove cards that like interacting with players in strange ways, you know, play a card from someone's hand or whatever, or just because like you didn't want to be tutoring as much when people couldn't see what you were doing and it just felt weird. That was one of the things that was when I started removing tutors. So there's a lot of things that like you optimize for the play experience versus maybe necessarily power. And sometimes the game is better for having done that, for sure.
Well, and that's another thing too, is I know this is kind of controversial for some playgroups, but taking out fetch lands is a way to optimize because you're saving time shuffling and spending all this time searching for lands and all that stuff. Mm. Plus, I mean, you wear out your sleeves faster. That's kind of an unsaid benefit, but I guess there is one. But yeah, taking out fetches could be a way of optimizing for just time. That way you're not spending minutes at a time shuffling, trying to find everything. It slows the game down so much. And so maybe that's another way that you can optimize for the social experience.
And going back to how it can also be a personal thing, like, so a little while ago, I made a video about ranking all of my commander decks about how often, by how often I actually play them. And that was a very fun video to do. And in that video, I discovered, like, while I was talking about it, I was like, wait, why did I stop playing my Rahan and Ishai deck as often as I did? Oh, yeah, it's because I had a whole bunch of, like, literally the example you just said, a whole bunch of fetch lands were in it. So I actually ended up taking the fetch lands out of that one and replaced them with another type of duel or something like other three color, whatever. And I did start grabbing that deck more often because I wasn't having such a headache in the early turns, constantly shuffling. So like, Matt, your example right there isn't just hypothetical. I literally lived that exact experience.
Yeah, it's just something that it comes down to A, personal preference, but B, like, how much do you value your time? Do you want to maybe squeeze out a percentage point or two in favor of having the games draw out that much longer? And also, it's the budget. How much money do you want to put into these fetch lands that all they do is drag the game out? So do you want to speed things up and maybe take it a little lighter on your wallet? It's all personal preference, but I know I've seen a lot of players kind of leaning towards, let's just get this done with it. We've been here for an hour and a half. I want to get to something else.
Well, while it's been fun challenging some of these assumptions, I think we could also maybe take a little pause here, challenge some stats.
Challenge stats. There it is.
Am I going to get any of the segues in any of the shows in 2023 or
New Year's resolution?
That was the best segue we've maybe ever done. So well played, Dana.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Let's take a break and then come back with some challenges, you guys. All right. Well, since you guys keep stealing my segues, I'm going to do the first challenge, the stats this episode, as payback for you. So I'm going to get into mine here. And
Joey, we're going to let you do it first.
So I'm going to talk about Crux of Fate and Zyatora decks, Matt. That's what I'm going to do. Speaking of board wipes, I really enjoy board wipes that like leave your stuff alone that can be one-sided. Like those do progress a game real fast. And the card Crux of Fate is a dragon-specific board wipe that currently only shows up in 16% of the 3,600 Zyatora decks out there. That, as a reminder, is the 3 black-black sorcery. Choose one, destroy all dragon creatures, or destroy all non-dragon creatures. And Zyatora the Incinerator is a super popular new Capenna commander that is a demon dragon. So if you cast this, you could potentially keep your commander in play. But not only that, there are also just by happenstance a lot of dragons that also happen to appear in the average Zyatora decklist as well. Like Goldspan Dragon, for example, shows up in 43% of the 3,600 Zyatora decks out there. Or Quarvold is another very common card that you'll see in a Zyatora deck. Old Gnawbone as well. So there are a lot of incidental dragons, and I just think that this is a really great board wipe for this deck where your commander will be unaffected by it, and a bunch of really great creatures in the 99 would be unaffected by it too. Will occasionally your opponent have a dragon or a changeling that lives? Sure, but is it worth it to keep your commander and a bunch of other stuff like Old Gnawbone alive? I really think so. So this is a one-sided board wipe that I think would be really, really effective for this Jund Dragon commander. I hope you all enjoy it. All right, I'm all done with my challenge. Let's move it on.
Well, Joey, I'll chime in now because I have a patron submitted the challenge of stats this week. So Discord member Viventus Moores chimed in, and which they did in the Discord, which you can join at patreon.com/edhrecast if you're so inclined. But they submitted Ozgear the Reconstructor, which everybody knows. It's the most played Boros commander of all time now. Skyrocketed in popularity. But there is one card that they noted that might actually be a little bit better than what currently is going on. So they noted that only 45 Ozgear the Reconstructor decks are playing Thornbite Staff. So Thornbite Staff is 2 mana for an equipment that says equipped creature has pay 2 mana and tap it. This creature deals 1 damage to target creature or player. And whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from play, untap this creature. And then whenever a shaman creature comes into play, you may attach Thornbite Staff to it. So if you're looking at Ozgear the Reconstructor, you already have a Sacrifice Outlet, and Viventus Moores goes on to say, "Old Reliable herself, Thornbite Staff gives Ozgear the ability to untap himself whenever he sees a creature enter any graveyard from the battlefield. What makes this combination even more potent is the fact that Ozgear has a sacrifice ability built into him already." This means you can tap him to reanimate something from your graveyard, sacrifice one of the tokens to copy him, untap him, then reanimate something else from your graveyard. It's a combo piece that's fantastic. It also goes well with Brea's Apprentice, Meteor Golem, et cetera, et cetera.
Ooh.
So there's a lot of sauce that you can do with this little 1-2 punch. So Viventus Moores, this is a fantastic catch. This is one that Thornbite Staff, I don't believe it's been reprinted since back in Lorwyn Block. Now, historian Dana Roach, you may be able to correct me here. But it's been a while, and Thornbite Staff isn't even a cheap card anymore. I want to say it's creeping north of $15, so not even a budget option anymore. But the power is certainly there. So Paventus, great catch. I absolutely love this. This is just a really, really nice synergy.
And yes, Matt, it hasn't even had a list reprint. It's had nothing since Lorwyn.
It was Morning Tide, I want to say.
It was Morning Tide. And Matt, I have to correct you. Ozgear is not the most popular Boros commander. He's Lorehold. Thank you very much.
Oh my God.
We were talking about people well actually-ing, right? This is the well actually show.
I'm about to reach through the screen and boop you on the nose. Dana, get to the challenge before I dwell on this too much.
Save me, Dana.
So my challenge this week is for Nylea's Colossus, which is a card we talked about when it was released, and a couple of us were fans of it when we did the original preview show for it, but I don't think we've really addressed it very much since then. And it's a 6 in green, so 7 mana total for an enchantment creature giant, so it being an enchantment is relevant. It's a 6/6 and has Constellation. Whenever Nylea's Colossus or another enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, double target creature's power and toughness until the end of turn. In an Enchantress deck, sometimes really struggle to find a way to win a game. They are very efficient. They draw a lot of cards. They do a lot of things. One of the things they tend to struggle with is actually killing people sometimes. Nylea's Colossus just reads kill target player. And it's unlike something like Craterhoof Behemoth, where you use it and hope you kill everyone that one turn, or it's used up and done for the most part. Nylea's Colossus comes down, maybe kills one person, and if it sticks around, or if you have more than enough mana, which is something that Enchantress decks often do, it's something that can kill multiple people once you start doubling and tripling multiple creatures' power with it. It is a ridiculously powerful effect, and if you're playing an Enchantress deck with access to green, you probably should have this in your deck as a way to close things out. It's a disgusting card and just should see more play than the 8,000 decks it's in right now.
Hot dang. Yeah, this is also like, I think we mentioned it earlier, like things that you'd be excited to lose to.
Sure, yeah.
This is a card I'm excited to lose to. Like a Craterhoof, I've seen it, been there, done that. But Nylea's Colossus made your thing an uncountably large, uncountably large.
Yes. Right.
Is that the technical term, Joey? Uncountably large.
Yes, but make sure that the uncountably large / uncountably large creature has some form of evasion, because otherwise I will block it with my 0/1 plant token. And
right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, really, really fun card. All right, cool. Let's segue back into our topic. We've got more hot takes to dish out, I assume. So Dana, if we're going to pass it back to you, what's another scalding hot take or potentially lukewarm take? It's totally up to you that you would like to bring out now.
I've got one here. Players probably don't run enough lands. But missing land drops isn't necessarily a function of not having enough lands in your deck once you're, say, in the upper 30 land range. Mm-hmm. I would say more often than not, it's a function of not having enough draw in your deck, particularly
I knew where you
draw.
Were going with this as soon as you opened up, Dana. Yeah.
If you're at like 37 or 38 lands and you find yourself missing land drops, the solution to that isn't to add three more lands in, it's to add three more draw spells in. Not only is that going to probably fill the void for those lands and get you more lands into your hand at the point in time when you need them, that's never going to be a dead draw on turn 10 when you are already holding, you know, three planes in your hand and you draw that fourth because you're running 46 lands. that's going to be a card that's still going to be playable and still going to hopefully draw you down into something else. So again, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of people out there that aren't running enough lands in their deck. But just because you're not hitting your land drops, it isn't necessarily because of that. Oftentimes, I think it's because you're not drawing enough cards. Matter of fact, I would dare say just in general, I see more decks that aren't running enough draw spells than I do see decks that aren't running enough lands.
I don't know where I would fall on that. I do feel like, I don't know, I do the Upping the Average series on this channel, for example, and it's pretty common for me to open up an average deck list, and it's just like, it's 33 lands, and the commander is 7 mana, and I'm like, how? Like, that right. just doesn't, I'm just like, okay, you need some more. But
for
I
sure.
agree, more card advantage is going to help you out in all of those situations as well. So, like, cosine is what I'm trying to say.
And yeah, I would agree. Like, 33, unless you're playing CEDH, is probably not nearly enough. But, like, if you're still struggling at 38, that's almost always going to be a function of you just not drawing enough cards or filtering through enough cards or whatever it is.
Yeah. And again, it's nuanced because there are some archetypes, like Elf Ball decks, for example, don't want to play 37 lands. That would be ludicrous. They want to play closer to, like,
yes.
32 or 33, maybe, because so many of the cards in that deck are mana dorks that produce a whole bunch of extra mana. And so, like, your curve matters, the strategy matters, but generally speaking, I do tend to start around 37 or so. And then I also tend to start around, like, a dozen or so draw or velocity effects because, yeah, I want to get those lands. I want to actually be able to play my game.
Okay, so Joey, you're talking about mana, playing lands, all that stuff. I'm going to make probably the most controversial thing I've said on the podcast ever. I'm going to say that the ABU duels, so we're talking Underground Sea, Plateau, Savannah, those the original dual lands, those may be the most overrated cards for Commander, full stop.
That's not a controversial take at all, Matt. That's just true.
But looking at social media, looking at some of the comments that we get, you would swear that these are required. But in 2023, where we've gotten so many rare land cycles, we've kind of hinted at this before, but I'm going to definitively say this episode that I think that the ABU duels, especially for the amount of power that they add to a deck for the money that you have to invest into them, they are absolutely not necessary. And they're just overrated. That no cycle of cards or just cards in general might be more overrated for Commander than the original ABU duels.
The amount that they will affect your win percentage is vanishingly minuscule. I absolutely agree. I don't think that's even a controversial. I don't know if that's a hot take. That feels like a pretty, like, that's a take. Like, that's a
it's just a take. Yeah, it's just a take then. But and I'm not saying they're not powerful, but the like I said, when I mentioned earlier that the power gap between the top 1% of cards with the rest of the field, this especially is where the gap has gotten extremely small. There's so much that you can do with all your rare lands. I just don't see, especially for the price that you have to pay, I don't think these are worth it at all.
So I will throw some personal experience in here. Up until about half of this year, I had dual lands, ABUR duels in all of my decks. I was lucky enough to get them when they were relatively inexpensive, and I had them for every deck I had built. It just worked out that way. Or the couple I didn't have, I had picked up again fairly cheaply. So if I was running an Izzet deck, I had a Volcanic Island. If I was running a Azorius deck, I had a Tundra. And I wound up taking them out in the middle of the summer or so. I was trying to put some money together to buy Twitter, and it wound up not working. But
wow!
Wow! I'd done a better job, but whatever. Let's not get into that. So I wound up getting rid of all my ABUR duels. And I honestly can say, since I've done that, I don't know if I've noticed one time where I've been in a situation where, like, I wish I had that to go get here. I literally don't think it's made a difference at once in any of my decks. Now, granted, I'm playing two color decks almost exclusively, so you know I don't maybe need the fixing as badly as you might in say a five color deck where it's maybe a little bit more beneficial to be able to you know fetch into an untapped duel. But for me, it's been entirely irrelevant not having them in my decks.
Yeah, I absolutely feel you on that. And I guess that actually, Matt, that makes me want to jump into a thing that I think might be a controversial thing that I say specifically to you, actually. I think this might be a point upon which we disagree. So I hope you're ready for that.
Okay.
Because I know a thing that you've mentioned before is that you are not a fan of the way that Wizards of the Coast has been designing explicitly, you know, it does card designs explicitly for the Commander format. And you preferred the time when Wizards of the Coast just let Commander players figure their own stuff out and they weren't catering so much to it. And Dana, I guess you also share that perspective to an extent as well. I know that Matt has said it more explicitly, but I don't want to assume anything, but I know that Matt's definitely said it a lot. My thing here is that it is fine that Wizards of the Coast designs for the Commander format. It's the thing that I think isn't fine is when they started to do the designing for Commander at the expense of other formats. That, yes, to me, is my line. Whereas, like, here are some things that Commander players will like. I don't have any problems with that at all. Like, I've mentioned it before. Grey Merchant of Asphodel was a pre-Commander design kind of design. Or Rhystic Study. Like, that's not a very good card for the format with the play patterns it encourages and how much of a nuisance it is. So that was, like, a pre-EDH-focused type of design that I don't really like. And I do like a lot of things that were designed explicitly for Commander. I think there are some really great Commander designs, like, you know, Baldur's Gate was a set that we totally like a whole lot of Legends from. And that wouldn't have happened unless they were designing for Commander. But when they make Commander designs that stomp all over other formats, that's when I'm like, okay, WotC, let's take a seat, babes. Like, this ain't good. This ain't good for us. So that's my line. And I don't know where you feel on that, but I hope that we can have an actual dialogue about it instead of, you know, doing the internet thing of yelling at each other or whatever. I don't know.
So I absolutely do love the distinction that you made of. It's not that you don't want Commander to be not the focus, but a major consideration, I think, is a fair point to make when it comes to designing cards. I think that's totally fair, but at the expense of other formats, because Legacy has been kind of upturned a little bit, and Eternal formats always seem to, True Name Nemesis years ago kind of put Legacy up into a tizzy. So,
right,
yes, at the expense of other formats is a really, really good distinction that I can actually 100% get on board with. My original sentiment of we don't need Wizards of the Coast designing cards for Commander, I think that more was a broad thing because we'll get by with everything. But when we see stuff like Korvold was kind of the scourge, if you will, of Standard for a little bit, because it was so hard to get. It was designed for Commander only. You could only get in the Brawl precons, but also it in competitive formats, in 60 card formats, there is such a thing as must plays. And Korvold became a must play card for a certain strategy, and it just was absolutely just a mess because it wasn't designed for Standard, but it was Standard legal for some reason beyond me. And so, yes, when people are designing cards for Commander, but it spills over into other formats, that's where I really struggle with how things are kind of getting intermingled between.
Yeah.
Companion doesn't even do what it's supposed to do because they wanted Commander to be in Standard, and that just didn't work. So
yes, that is such a great example for it. Yeah.
Yeah. You see cards that were designed for Commander ruining other formats, that's where I have the issue. And I'm just like, you don't need to do this for us. We'll be just fine.
Yes. And I completely am on board with your, like, we will be just fine. If they stopped designing stuff for Commander, I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, we'll be good. A lot of people might even prefer it that way. I'd be fine with that too. I'm generally only, it's only a problem for me when, like, you know, the Initiative did whatever the Initiative did to Legacy, for example. I'm like, this is an issue. And it creates, again, such a horrible thing online where a lot of people who play Legacy get mad at Commander players as though we're the ones who were at fault for that. And it's just like, we didn't make the cards. I don't know what to tell you. So, like, it just gets all types of thorny. And that's where I'm like, that is why that's my line. So,
so I have some things to say about this and some thoughts. So
yeah, okay.
So one of the things we've lost out on is that sense of exploration. They're printing for Commander, and they know exactly, for the most part, what the card they print is going to wind up doing. So it's very challenging to find a commander and brew it in a way that hasn't already been planned out in advance and known that you would do that thing with it. Whereas once upon a time, you would find this card printed, you know, back in Odyssey block and be like, oh, wait a minute, I can use this commander to do this thing and build this deck. And like, there was a sense of discovery there. And I think back to like when I first started playing, you know, World of Warcraft, there were situations where like I would find myself in a zone late at night. Winter Spring would be the one that springs to mind, and there's nobody there, and I don't know if anyone on my server had been there yet. Like, I had anyone figured out how to get through this tunnel to get to this thing yet? There's nobody here right now. I've never been here. Possibly no one on the server has been here, and like that sense of wonder and exploration is a really, really cool thing. But that's not replicatable. It's not replicatable in World of Warcraft because it requires like this giant amount of content that they made on release and they will never make again. And it's not replicatable in Commander because it requires this backlog of 20 years worth of legends that no one was using in this format for years. So like that thing is gone, but it's not gone because they print for Commander. It's gone because it can't exist again. So while I miss that, that isn't the fault of them printing for Commander. And I do think people conflate those two things. They feel that sense of wonderment is gone, which it is, but that's got nothing to do with the fact that like they're printing for Commander and everything to do with the fact that the format is just different and there's a lot of folks playing it and frontiers can only be explored once before they're no longer a frontier.
Yeah. Wow. I'm so moved. Sorry.
So while I miss that, I get why it's not a thing. I'm not blaming anyone for that thing. I do think my one complaint I had about them printing for Commander is there was a window where they weren't just printing for Commander. They were printing to make cards be the most desired card to use in Commander in whatever color pair they were. There was a conscious attempt. I felt like in knowing how business works and the desire to sell product, there was an attempt to make Chulainn the best banned card ever printed or best banned commander ever printed. An attempt to make Meryn the strongest Golgari reanimator thing ever done. And Mel'Drotha being the only thing you wanted to play in Sultai colors. But I feel like they've moved past that phase of design as well. So like I definitely had an issue with that where it felt like they were printing these commanders that kind of forced people to play them or you were going to be doing weaker things than everyone else. Other commander could do in that color pair. But again, I think they've moved past that. So like I no longer feel like we're in the state of design where they're doing that. So I actually kind of am on board with you. I think it's fine. And I also think that it's accidentally corrected an issue I also kind of used to have when I first started playing, where a set would come out and there'd be like five legends in the set. So you'd get hyped to build that one legend and show up at your LGS, you know, that week, and four people would have built that same deck because sure. Because there was five commanders, right? And two of them were bad. So they like people would build the three that weren't, and you would just have a ton of overlap. Nowadays, there's 50 legends per set, and there's a new set coming out in 2 weeks. Like, there's a really good chance that even if you grab the most popular commander from your set, you're going to show up at your LGS and no one else is going to have that deck just because mathematically that's just how that breaks down. So I think they've accidentally also like addressed a weird issue that used to exist where you just see different decks constantly because there's so many different brewing choices. And I think that's healthy for the format as well. And I like seeing that. I like seeing that many different decks. And many times I can go a month without playing the same deck twice. That's fantastic.
Dana, that definitely hits with me. Like that is definitely a silver lining of the fact that they're making, you know, 100 new legends every set.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying I want them to go back to only making like five or something legends per set either. But this is where the nuance re-enters the conversation again. Like, as you said, when they design those commanders to do a very specific thing, we end up with a lot of decks that can feel prescriptive, like how we've seen in the data that Kadena or Gavi decks or things like that tend to look extremely similar from one player to the next. Like, those commanders' designs don't leave a ton of wiggle room because they're so specific in their strategy. And, like, a lot of people would blame, quote, net decking as the culprit there, but, like, the reality of having 30-plus legendary creatures every set release is that those designs have to be super niche. And the more niche a commander is, the smaller its pool of synergies is going to be, and the more you'll have to rely upon the best of that small pool. And so your deck is inevitably going to look just like someone else's deck with the same hyper-niche strategy. So, you know, that's all, you know, a lot. It's and also, I guess I've voiced this on episodes before, but I guess I'll state it again here as well. But, like, my other big beef with getting so many legends every set is that WotC really quickly refashions or repurposes some of the exact same designs in quick succession. So, like, we had Wolfgar, who doubles attack triggers. And then shortly afterwards, we got Isshin, who doubles attack triggers. Or this past year, we just recently got Celestine, an awesome new take on mono white. She reanimates your stuff based on life gain. That's really cool. And then we immediately afterwards got Rodolf, who is Orzhov and who reanimates based on your life gain. It's the same thing we just saw. And so, yeah, that repetitiveness just feels like also kind of eh. And this is also to say nothing of the way that all of these increased number of legends is a thing that we've seen affect WotC's design choices in other ways. Like, we've seen them play faster and looser with making non-legendary copies of things. So anyway, yes, there's definitely the silver lining, but I guess I just am trying to say that I still have angst about this. And as a consumer, I'm not sure what else to do except to just voice the concern. And as a player, I am not sure what else to do about it except to just recenter myself and figure out the stuff I like and what makes me drawn to the game in the first place. But yeah, it's all complicated.
Yeah, there's just no perfect iteration, I don't think, right? Like, the system was flawed before, and it's got different flaws now, and there's no way to combine those things in a perfect way to eliminate all the flaws. So yeah. It's just a matter of, like, embracing the good of the current situation and you know, understanding that there's no way to have there not be downsides.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. It's really hard to narrow it down. So with that said, though, I'm going to hop into my last point. And this one, Joey, I know this is actually a hot take because every time we've hinted at it in previous episodes, the comment section has gotten lively, to say the least. So one point okay. that I see more and more folks talking about that I want to firmly stand in advocacy of is you should never feel afraid to walk away from a game because a pregame conversation gives you the feeling that the game is not what you are looking for. So if you sit down and you're talking with folks about maybe playing a game together and three people want to play something super silly and janky and you want something high powered, you absolutely should feel no pressure. Say, you know what? This is what I'm kind of looking for. And it looks like you three want something else. I'll just go find a different pod. That's fine. That is not a bad thing that you should feel ashamed of saying. And likewise, if you have three people that want to play something high powered and you're just like, I just want to kind of like dink around a little bit. I have this chair tribal deck that I want to try out. Absolutely. Go do that. Find the games that are worth it for you to play. If you can't find a pod, like, there's no shame in walking away, looking for a different pod, especially if you go to bigger events, say you go to a Magic Fest or whatever, you are going to find a different pod. So you shouldn't feel pressure to sit down and take part in a game that you maybe don't have the best feeling about. This is one that, especially as a content creator, I don't want to sit down and put people through a game that maybe they weren't expecting or on board with. Say,
yes.
I absolutely want everybody to feel like they signed on and got exactly what they wanted. And so if that means one person walks away or I'm the one that walks away, nobody should ever feel bad because a game was shaping up to be something they didn't want to participate in. For some reason, that's still controversial, but it should not be at all. This should be a take, not a hot take.
I am. No one is entitled to your time.
Absolutely, just not, like, absolutely not.
Right? Like, yeah. And so, yeah, people think that it's rude if you leave. Like, no, you you know, you are a grown person who knows what's good for them and you know what's not good for you. And if stuff isn't meshing and you don't feel comfortable doing the thing, yes, yeah. And I have seen plenty of the rhetoric online that you're referring to, Matt. And it sucks that people think that you are that you'd be rude if you asserted your boundaries and you held fast to what you do and do not want to do. Like, goodness. Yeah, you're right. That shouldn't be a hot take. Not at all. But I have seen people try to argue to the contrary, and it's... It looks foolish when they try to argue to the contrary. No one is entitled to you but you.
And
Boundaries are one of the most... Well, go ahead, Dana.
I keep thinking of... There's a line in the movie Gross Point Blank where he says, if someone sends me to your house, there's a reason I'm there. If someone walks away from a game, like, there's a reason they're walking away. Is someone occasionally overreacting and being a, you know, baby about it? Sure, that's going to definitely happen. Like, for the most part, if someone feels strong enough about a situation where they're going to just scoop and, like, not play for whatever reason... They're doing so because they legitimately feel strongly about it, and that's perfectly okay, if not healthy.
Yeah. Mm. Nobody, like you said, Joey, boundaries are a great thing. Boundaries are one of the healthiest things you can have as a Magic player, whether it's how much you get invested in the game or whatever that is. So setting your own boundaries, I don't want you to feel forced to sit down and play a game with me, but don't lock me in on the other side as well. I just... Again, like I'm getting flustered even talking about this because this is one thing that every time I see somebody say, no, you shouldn't walk away after a pregame conversation, that in no way is a contract that says, okay, I'm going to play the game with you. It's let's find something. And if we can't find an agreement, then we'll go find somebody else that wants that same experience. So yeah, this one I absolutely it frustrates me to no end when people feel entitled to somebody else's time because I'm guessing you wouldn't like it if the tables were reversed.
And especially the thing, this is also, oh man, okay, we are getting a little bit flustery. this is also the kind of thing that, like, it still happens where people do still misrepresent what their decks are doing, even in those pregame conversations. Like, oh, you know, this is a deck that plays, this is a Pillowfort deck when actually it's, like, full of the Armageddons and the Winter Orbs. And it's just like, that ain't what Pillowfort means, though. That's what Stax means. That different. And that's not necessarily what I signed up for. And even if we're already deep into a game, that is a moment that I would have to reevaluate and be like, is this actually how I want to spend my time? Probably not. And I feel like I was lied to and cheated a little bit from the experience that I had been promised. And yeah, that gets awkward. But at the end of the day, I want to make sure I am spending my time in a good way. And if someone was straight up lying, like, that ain't good. And it's just weird that, yeah, it's weird that there's a lot of discussion that tries to deny, I guess, that sometimes those are things that actually occur. Like, that's another thing I've seen. People say that, like, oh, pub stomping doesn't exist and never existed. And it's just like, well, I have lived experience where that isn't true, actually. Like, that is a thing that I've had to sit through. And it's potentially even a thing that I've accidentally done to other people, too. And I'm not proud of that. But it's, like, just pretending that it never was a thing doesn't make any sense. And so, like, yeah, like, draw your lines and be encouraged to stand firm on those things. And okay, the flustering hit me again. Sorry if I started to soapbox. I don't know if I said any of that well, but
no, that absolutely makes complete sense, and I'm 100% with you guys on this for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing that got me activated like this is when people were like, Armageddon is a solution to Green's ramp. And it's like, no, that isn't true.
No.
Calm down, y'all. That's like,
are you setting me up for my last hot take here, Joey?
Is that your last hot take?
That is my last one.
I'm psychic. I'm psychic. I was not paying attention to your notes at all. I promise. It's funny.
My last one I have here is if MLD becomes socially acceptable, it will solve the problem of Green ramp.
You're kidding.
There's two problems with that, and here's why. either you don't understand that the Selesnya and Gruul decks will just do mass land destruction better than anybody else will while also still ramping, or you're being disingenuous about it because you're the one that wants to do those things with the Selesnya and Gruul decks, and neither of those two things make me want to take you seriously when you offer up that opinion. Maybe mass land destruction is needed in the format. I don't know. I'm not going to address that here, but it's not a solution to Green ramp at all. And if someone thinks it is, I don't understand how you've came to that conclusion.
Even if you consider it a solution, like, you're not doing the math of the, like, the collateral damage, because there are more people than just the green player at the table who you are also affecting their time to. Like,
Right. Yeah, it basically boils down to one person's having too much fun, now nobody gets to have any fun.
Sure. Right.
That's kind of how I view it, but...
Quite honestly, if you want me to take the next step, the solution to too much green ramp is to tell your friend who's playing too much green ramp that they're playing too much green ramp and it's super annoying. And maybe they should pull a couple of those ramp cards out because it's time consuming and they race ahead of everybody else. And it's tough to deal with if everyone else isn't playing green. Like that's the solution usually.
I feel like the solution is like, I don't know, I've got an Archivist of Ogma on my deck and also the combat step is coming your way.
Sure,
like,
sure, right.
That's
yeah.
where, like, if you don't want them to do a bunch of stuff with all of their mana resources, hit them faster. Like that's
right.
That's kind of where, that's like the most Matt Morgan thing I've ever said before is like, I want to smash.
Yeah.
I say that, but like, I'm not entirely sure I even believe that green ramp is a problem. Like I've definitely seen green ramps that have decks that have taken off, but I've seen plenty of green decks that have ramped like crazy and had nothing to do with that ramp either. Like,
yes,
if you're going to ramp like crazy, you better also be drawing cards like crazy to take advantage of it, or it's not doing you any good. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm not entirely convinced that's the problem people think it is, but that's a different thing than I was addressing here.
Yeah. Blowing up all of the lands because one person had too many lands. Like, and to me, that's saying scorched earth.
Yeah.
Everything just has to go away instead of, hey guys, we have a target. We know who the threat is because it's very obvious right there on the battlefield.
Right.
That's where my mind goes to is, oh, Dana's got 13 lands. Joey and I have 7 between both of us. So Joey, would you like to attack Dana because he has too many resources? That is exactly, okay, I'm biased, but that is exactly how the conversation should go.
Yes.
Just, you have public enemy number one. Go after them instead of hurting everybody else because
right,
whoever else the fourth person is, like, they don't deserve to have all of their resources stripped away when all they're trying to do is also participate.
Yes. Yeah. That's like, and I think the root of the statement, like, oh, Armageddon would be a solution to green ramping, whatever, is like really just an unspoken desire to play in a meta where that would be a good card.
Yes.
And like, say that part instead of the other thing. Like, if you want to play in...
Yeah.
The real solution in when somebody casts an Armageddon is make sure they don't play again next week, which means you slash their tires at their house so that they don't make it to the game shop.
Exactly.
Please actually don't do that. I say that in complete sarcasm, but I feel like that will get taken out of context. So,
but no, I definitely get that vibe a lot of times from people who advocate for mass land destruction, that they just want to, they start at the wrong end. They haven't been like, how do we solve this problem? Mass land destruction is the answer. That's not what they do. They start with, I want to play mass land destruction because blowing up lands is funny to me. So how can I tell people this is why it's a good thing? And I do get that vibe a whole ton from people that most like blowing up lands, as they're coming at it from their direction and trying to justify what they want to do versus having that be the actual solution to a problem.
And I don't want this to come across too like we're saying you should never do it, because if you're floating 15 mana, you're playing Armageddon and following it up directly with Splendid Reclamation, you're going to win the game next turn. That is absolutely it's a valid strategy for sure. But people who play Armageddon because they want to play Armageddon and they have no follow-up strategy to that or no, it comes down to a socially optimized experience. And Armageddon in a majority of decks is not an optimal card if you're trying to have those positive social experiences with other players. That's the big thing. If you are working on a certain strategy and you play Armageddon, but you're able to follow it up and win the next, I would give you 5 minutes before I just walk away. That's kind of what I would do.
I don't even know if I would grant the 5 minutes personally, but like the other thing that comes into this is that, like, I don't know, Heroic Intervention is a card, right? So like, you might cast the Armageddon thinking that you've got the perfect follow-up, you'll be the only person with resources, and then you'll be able to win the game handily. Someone else has a Heroic Intervention, their lands are also safe.
Sure.
Boom, boom. Someone cheats an Avacyn into play, maybe. I don't know. They're like a bunch of wild stuff. And then your strategy didn't work, but there's definitely one person who's screwed over now, and that's the thing that really sucks for me. And like, I don't even care about my lands. I care about everyone having a good experience, and did that just take all of the air out of the room? And that's like, you know, again, with the nuance of the stuff and the things and stuff. And like, there is going to be someone who didn't get the experience that they wanted. And it's more of an issue if that wasn't mentioned in a Rule Zero conversation, in a pregame conversation. And Armageddon out of nowhere is the actual problem. And so that's why if you do want to play in a meta where Armageddon is a regular thing, a cool thing, it's a cutthroat type of style that everyone's after, that is the place to start from, as opposed to, you know, the other thing where it becomes accidental, hurt feelings get hurt. And then it leads to all of those online threads where we see, am I the jerk because I did the thing, or my playgroup is all picking on me for no reason? And it's just like, there might be a reason, bud. Like, I don't know. I'm starting to fluster again.
Well, Joey, for the sake of our combined blood pressure, we gotta watch out for Dana anyway. So, but right, let's wrap this episode up. I feel like we did enough to stir the pot for the community. I'm sure we're going to get the comments, and that's totally fine. We love the engagement for sure. But let's wrap up because my head hurts already.
Oh, but Matt, I have so many more hot takes that I could, they're scalding hot takes that I could bring.
But if we had any more hot takes, then we're going to start running a fever, and that's just not healthy.
So maybe we'll have to just do another hot take show down the road.
There we go. There we go.
Ooh, yeah, very, very possible. Very, very possible. Listeners will have to, you'll have to let us know what are your commander hot takes, and make sure that they're actually hot takes, not Avacyn is underplayed or things like that. Let's actually hear some of those things that might be a little bit controversial, but like do have a root of truth in them. And again, I hope that we've succeeded in not just being sensationalized about it, but like communicating a lived experience and a thing that might not always go with the wisdom of the masses, so to speak. This is complicated and nuanced, and that's what we like to see, is the complication and the nuance, because people are very, very complex, and we hope we've been able to share some of that type of experience with you. Okay, but Matt, you're absolutely right. Let's call this episode to a close. Where is it that our listeners can find us if they want to get in touch with us online?
Yeah, so you can find me over at Twitter, so at Mathimus55, that's MathimuS55. And don't forget, over at twitch.tv/EDHRecCast, we are streaming every Wednesday evening. We have games, we have guests, and it's always a super fun time. So make sure you tune in for all of that as well.
And Dana.
You can find me on Twitter at Dana Roach. You can hear me on my other podcast, CMDR Central. I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and Commander's Herald, and you can find all of us together at patreon.com/EDHRecCast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on the online. And you can find the cast at EDH RecCast on Facebook and Twitter and all of those online places too. Plus, if you've got a question for us, you can contact us at edhrecast@gmail.com. Our thanks go out once again to Chase for assisting me with the post-production of the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves. Listeners, we'll be back at you next week with more data and insights. But until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.